Solitaire Rose Radio, Episode 16, An Interview with Peter Rios, Part 2. Continue the interview I did with Peter Rios. This will be the second part of a three-part extravaganza. We talked for quite a long time, and as I was working on editing, it seemed to be a complete episode, so I decided I would make it a three-parter, also because I don't like going over an hour on a solo podcast. I know Joe and I on Crazy Comics and Stories go over an hour pretty much every time. I'll just say that that's not my idea. In this, Peter talks about more about leaving Comic Geek Speak, the aftermath of that, and then goes into the year solo podcast he did. Here's the conversation. Enjoy. So you were talking about the university job and how even if you wouldn't have stepped away at the beginning of summer, you would have had to step away from Comic Geek Speak at the end of the summer. One of the things that I found fascinating was Comic Geek Speak was at a size, it seemed, that you were, and no, I'm not blowing smoke up your skirt here, you were a mini celebrity, and it was like when an actor leaves a TV show where everybody thought, oh, there's got to be a reason, there's got to be this, there's got to be that. And no matter how hard people tried to say, no, there's nothing here, it's work related, conspiracies just started spinning out of control. And you were very quiet about it. But I wonder, did you know about this stuff? And did you see it as something amusing? Or did you see it as, how did you see it?
Oh, yeah, I laughed at it a bunch of times because it just sort of speaks to comic fandom again, right? You know, anytime any little story breaks out or anything that seems like it can't just be that simple. And then when it turns out to be that simple, they still don't believe it. And, because we got a host on the show that I really just didn't, I thought was wrong for the show. He was wrong in the way that he was brought onto the show. He was wrong about his responsibilities on the show because at that point, CGS was a show. We had major sponsors. We had, all kinds of stuff. We were major conventions. You know, we go on convention tours. The show would pay for, you know, our ticket entrance or a hotel or something like that. I mean, there were responsibilities. And, you know, again, I was never shy about talking, saying my opinion. And there were a lot of times even with the other guests, with the other hosts, you know, where I was sort of like, look, guys, you know, if so-and-so is giving us money to do whatever, we have to do this. Or if they're sending us something, we have to talk about it, or we have to at least mention it. And these are our responsibilities. We didn't make this show. The listeners made this show. The interaction, the stuff that we give back and forth, you know, the show became what it was because we put out quality stuff and we can't ever rest. We can't ever go backwards. So because I was very vocal about that kind of thing, and then we got a host on there that I thought was just completely wrong for the show, you know, they made it about that. They said, well, you're stepping away because of that. And I want to say, you sort of want to go, okay, I was going to all these conventions basically for free. I was getting books for free. I was talking to creators. I was talking to listeners. We would have these conventions. I was hanging with my friends. Okay, I'm going to let some schmuck make me walk away from that? Really? Are you gonna? Are people? So I never understood that whole thing. And if anything, you know, I actually would like to talk to Pants and you know, sort of see why he got burned out and eventually left the show as well. You know, Brian left because he just had family commitment and work commitment, and it's hard. It's hard to travel back and forth, you know, when you don't live in Reading anymore. You know, I sort of want to say to him what made him leave or, you know, sort of pull back. And some of it is just, you know what, you sort of want to, you did what you did on the show and when the time is right, or when the time comes where you have to make a decision about leaving, or and 100% committed. I'm an artist, you know. If I can't be 100% committed about something, I think I need to step away then, you know, and sort of hope that it travels on, you know. I can't do things. I hated being on the phone. I hated it. I hated being on the phone and not being there because, you know, I couldn't read reactions and it was hard to hear. The phone line was wonky and, you know, you can't, it's not a great conversation when someone is on the phone. And especially with me where I wanted to interact with all of them. And, it just got to the point where it was getting to be too much. I remember the winter before I left, I sent an email out and I said, "Hey guys, do we want to go to a one night recording? Just put out maybe two, three episodes a week. Let's cut back from the five show a week thing." I knew that they were, you know, they were getting more commitments with family and work and tired, you know, they were tired and it was a chore to sort of keep it going. And they were like, no, let's soldier on. And against my better judgment, I said, "All right, let's continue the five show a week thing." So I thought it was funny when I left that they did finally sort of cut back after that.
Yes.
When I just thought, you know, 6 months early, I said, "Guys, you know," so that was part of the producer in me understanding what was going on in the show. And I wish they would have listened, but whatever. Or I should have been stronger and said, "No, we're only doing one night because you guys are getting burnt out." So, you know, and eventually it hit me, you know, I was producing the show, entering the email, scheduling 2 months in advance, a month in advance, and editing the shows and putting it together and putting it out there. And, you know, I was getting too busy and I said, one thing has to go. Unfortunately, it had to be CGS. And that's really the simple answer to it all.
Now, about how many listeners did the show have at that time? Because in the book that Tomorrow's put out, you guys said that you had about 4,000 listeners. And what did it build to over the next few years?
Those early episodes, they're funny to listen to because Brian was the one who took care of all that stuff. And he would sort of announce, "Hey guys, we had 100 downloads last episode." And, then he announced like when we hit, I think 10,000 downloads or something like that. I don't know. I'd have no idea what the actual number is. And download numbers are kind of like convention attendee numbers, where conventions say they had 100,000 people, but they're counting a person who buys a 3-day ticket as three people.
Right.
I guess you can see I guess there's something to that. I don't know. I think it's the same thing with download numbers. And they're, are plenty of people who probably are still subscribed to a show, but they never listen. So it's like top 300 diamond numbers, you know, they're so weird. So here's how I kind of base it off of. I know there are some guideposts along the way. I know we hit like a million down. The problem was, is we were signed up with one company and then we switched and then we went back to Libsyn. So, somewhere like in the, I want to say I'm going to get it wrong. Maybe like the third year or something like that. I know there was at some point that Brian emailed me and said, we just hit a million downloads in total. And, you know, that's not hard to do. You put out enough episodes and enough people listen. I remember at a point there, we were averaging, I think this was in some of the earlier 300 episodes, like around episode 300 or somewhere, like 5,000 downloads per episode on an average, I want to say, I think.
Okay.
Remember? But I do know that eventually we were hitting, I mean, because we kept having to upgrade our server and all, you know, because of the forum and because of the episodes, and we were putting out episodes and they were getting so many hits. Brian was like, "Okay, we got to upgrade again." I know at the height of the show, At the height of the show, like that sort of mid-range between 300 and 700, we were reaching a lot of people. I don't know what the number is, but all I know, there are a couple factors. First of all, our hits from all over the world, our emails that we would get from all over the world, Sponsors used to tell us that when they advertised on our show, and they also advertised on other shows that were quote-unquote big shows, their web traffic would shoot through the roof. And, you know, because we always say, if you the least you can do to support our listeners, support our sponsors, is just go to their site at the very least. Please go to their site. And listeners used to do that. You know, we used to do a thing called Indie Challenge every month. I would pick four random indie comics from previews just because of a solicitation. I would email with DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service, and I would say, hey, would you mind giving this an extra little discount? And I remember getting emails from some of these creators saying, wow, I not only did I hit my diamond order minimum, but I hit it even more than I expected. Suddenly a lot of those indie challenges I noticed were getting into the top 300 comics. And these were some obscure, some of them were minor comics. So I know that we were pushing books that way. Creators at conventions used to say, man, so many people came up to us and said they heard us on the show. So between those factors and because we used to go on out to these, all the conventions, we had a lot of listeners. I don't know what the number is. Brian would be able to tell it more than I would. But, you know, I used to chuckle. People used to say, oh, it's part of the, you know, there's these top four or five podcasts that are really big, and CGS is one of them. And I used to just sit back and go, guys, I just know that we have a lot of listeners. You can't move books in the amounts that we're moving these books and not have a lot of listeners. And same sponsors are showing up on other shows, yet they're telling us they're not getting any traffic from them or they're not getting any response from them. I mean, it just, you know, some of it has to do with what you talked about early. Our listeners were spread out. You know, if other people started podcasts, chances are they were listening to that podcast and ours, so it was sort of like double dipping. But yeah. It was a lot. That's not an answer. I'm not a tech guy. I don't know how to read all that stuff. I know how many people listen to my show now, but no, sorry. I know what the hits are on my show now, but that doesn't mean anything.
Now, one of the things that happened was you took time away, and then when you came back with a completely different format. It was the Daily Rios, and when you announced it, my first thought was a podcast every day, just one person. I'm going to get so tired of you. Because you talked about, in the episodes where you talked about on podcasting, stuff that I didn't know, where podcasting came out of blogging, which I'd never heard. And it makes a lot of sense for some of the podcasts I listen to. Because I came to it from a very different way. Joe and I both did college radio.
Right.
And there was a website that we both subscribed to called PWInsider.com. It's a wrestling show. I mean, it's a wrestling website. And one of the things they do to get you to subscribe is, hey, if you subscribe, you get these audio shows. And they'd been doing it since 99. Where, you know, you can read the stuff for free and deal with all the crappy ads, or no ads, free audio.
Right.
And then a online friend, Bart Kopp, he wanted to do a liberal version of Rush Limbaugh. So again, it was a subscription model. If you subscribe, you get the radio shows when he got them done. And if you are of a liberal bent, Bart Kopp passed away earlier this year. And you can go to the website, and his widow has opened the site up. You can download all. I think it's over 170 shows. I was very fortunate to help with the last ones. But they came at it from, we're trying to do radio.
Right.
You know, and when you talked about, oh, this is just blogging, is that how you came into the Daily Rios? It's, I'm going to do blogging? Or was it, I miss parts of CGS? Or was it you wanted to try something that I don't know if anybody's done a daily potpourri podcast before?
Yeah.
What was the thought process?
Some of it was when I was talking, I would reach out to a couple people and I would sort of say, I have this idea. I want to do this. Derek Coward from the Comic Book Noise podcast has been telling me to do a solo show from probably from like 2006. He's been telling me you need to do a solo show. You need to do a solo show. And I think part of that is why I created the Tower spinoff on CGS, which was all about the Titans. And it's why Murd and I started Footnotes episodes and, you know, we eventually opened it up to the other geeks, but, you know, we always thought we would go back and just do just Adam and I and just, you know, talk about whatever. And I listened to a lot of solo podcasting, Augie DeBleek, Derek Coward, Bruce Rosenberger, the early ones, you know, Chris Marshall, Neil Gorman. Neil Gorman was, you know, he was sort of our quote unquote leader of comics podcasting back in the day. You know, before iTunes ever put podcasting on their system, he created the Bat Feed. It was called the Bat Feed, and where you could listen to all these shows just from one RSS feed, which is really what podcasting is about, this whole idea of it coming to you. So that was cool. You know, I was listening to all these solo casts and early on, and when I stepped away, I thought about the early days of podcasting and the other podcasts that I used to listen to, Lena Taylor being another one. But then there were all these other ones like the Dawn and Drew show and Keith and the Girl, that I think that's still going on. And they were just a partner, a couple, and they would talk about sex and their lives and that's it. You know, Mer Lafferty used to talk about her writing and she still does, you know, to this day. And, I liked that intimate nature and that intimate quality to it. You know, I wasn't inventing the wheel. I just kind of wanted what you went back and you said how all these shows were inspired by CGS and that's very true. And I love the ones that found their own voice, you know, like the Uncanny X-Cast or, you know, I talked about Raging Bullets, you know, they're focused on DC Comics and the Uncanny X-Cast were focusing on the X-Men and, Legion of Substitute Heroes talking about Legion, you know, they kind of pinpointed. I like what you're doing with the Kirby stuff because I feel like there aren't any, there are a few podcasts, but not a lot focusing primarily on creators. You know, they're focusing on publishers. They're focusing on certain comics or whatever, or certain, you know, maybe cartoons with about comics or comic movies, but I want to see more, you know, creator driven ones. Anyway, I was seeing some of the later inspired comic book shows or new comic book podcasts that had nothing to do with CGS. And right from episode one, they wanted to be a show like you talked about. They wanted to be a radio show. They wanted to be a podcast show. They had segments. They had music. They had their catchphrase. They had all this stuff. The first episode would be an hour and a half, 2 hours. And I sat there thinking, how are they planning on building a listenership on something that, yes, it's original because it's their point of view, but it's not necessarily creative. It's not allowing for stuff to grow organically. And I was seeing more and more of that, and I would try to listen. And you know what? Sometimes I would keep listening. Sometimes I wouldn't because I just couldn't handle the Zoo Crew nature of it. You know, we certainly got silly on CGS, but I don't know. I just don't like constantly cracking jokes and laughing into microphones. You know, it just that annoys me. So I said, you know what? I want to take all this stuff that people were talking about, that Derek Coward was talking about, and I want to do my own show, but I don't want it to be just about comics. There are other things I like to talk about. And I don't know if someone challenged me or what, or I just finally said, you know what? I'm going to do it every day. I'm going to do it every day for a year, 5 days a week. And I'm going to see if I can do it. I love podcasting. I love the medium and I love what it can do. And I just remembered some of those early podcasts. And they were just audio journals. That's all they were. People who used to blog now started talking. And you could be anywhere and you can do it. That fascinates me, you know. CGS schedule, I could be on my own schedule. And I think that's why I did the daily thing. And I said, okay, it can be 30 seconds. It could be 30 minutes. It could be whatever I want. Sometimes it was just silence. And I guess there's a little bit of performance art going on there for me, you know, with my theater background. But other times I really did just, I just wanted to talk and I wanted to talk about whatever. So it became a challenge. People thought I was nuts. I can't be the first one that has done that. There has to be other people who have done something like that. I remember getting an iTunes review that said, wow, this is kind of indulgent. And you just sort of wanted to smack the person upside the head and say, first of all, it is called The Daily Rios. So if you went into this show listening to something called The Daily Rios, hosted by a guy named Peter Rios, and you call it indulgent, I think you're more the moron than I am. And I also labeled it a personal journal. You know, that's the category I'm under in iTunes, personal journal, which means you can listen or you don't listen. I'm doing it, you know, like all things, I kind of do it for myself to see what it's like. And then, you know, if it catches ground, great. And I think that first year was fun and it was experimental. By the end of it, I was well and done with it. You know, I know I think you even mentioned, you know, the daily aspect was kind of, it started to be a little bit of an intrigue for listeners, you know, and when I stopped doing it daily, it kind of hurt the listenership a little bit. Well, I also took some time off and now I'm really sporadic. I think ever since I stopped, what I have maybe, I don't know, not even 15 episodes. I wanted to do the daily thing on my site, and I'm a couple weeks behind now, but you know, every day I wanted to start posting something, because not only is there podcast stuff, but there's visual things that I really want to throw out there. And again, this is all just, if it's just for me, great. But yeah, the daily thing was a challenge. That was a scary, it's interesting. I'll tell you that much. It teaches you how to be precise. And it teaches you how to, I say it teaches you how to be precise, yet I'm talking your ear off. It teaches you how to pinpoint and focus your ideas and your thoughts, because you don't want to spend too long on a solo show, you know.
One of the things that I really appreciated about it was you would have okay, we're going to do history of musical theater, which I know nothing about.
Yeah.
And you came at it for, I'm going to talk to you as if you know nothing about this. Why is this musical important?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day it might be you and your girlfriend in the car talking. And then Wednesday it's, oh, here's the comics that are coming out today. I haven't had time to read any of them, so I hope they're good. And it was that almost like you're at a jukebox just putting in random numbers. And there was a really interesting aspect to that. And toward the end, you'd built kind of a formula. But you also had no problem breaking that formula when a new idea hit.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the ones that always made me laugh, because I was working overnights at the time. The ones that made me laugh was when you would go, well, it's still Tuesday in Hawaii, so I guess this counts. Which meant, you know, you're bumping up against deadlines. And every creator on the planet bumps up against deadlines.
Right. I gave myself, I said, at first initially, I said, as long as I post it by midnight, I'm good. And then I can't remember if I was the one that said, wait a minute, or somebody emailed and said, you know, on the West Coast, midnight is 3 a.m. your time. I said, oh, I have till 3 a.m. technically. And then I think it was Pants who said, jokingly, oh, why don't you go to Hawaii time? It's six o'clock in the morning Eastern time. And I said, that's perfect. Yeah, to drop it. I think I missed that deadline once or twice. I definitely missed the midnight one a lot of times. You know, and then I kind of looked at it as long as I don't fall asleep, I'm great. You know, whatever. it was crazy. It's a crazy challenge. If you have enough going on in your life, or you have enough ideas, or you're, you know, that you can keep it interesting, you know, why not? I think it's an interesting gamble to try for a month or two, you know. I had some people who were inspired by it and started their own podcast, either inspired by it or just challenged by it. You know, Ryan Sanyo of the Sanyo Cast, he has a similar kind of podcast where he talks about Magic the Gathering and he talks about comics and he talks about dating and, he talks about, you know, work and his family, and he's very open and honest. So I know that, you know, that was partly an inspiration for him. And I started noticing some other solo casts. I'm not saying that I like those. I like going back to that sort of intimate one-on-one conversation with you and the listeners. You know, I still listen to Derek Coward. I still listen to Bruce Rosenberger. If Augie was still podcasting, I'd be listening to him. If Neil Gorman was still podcasting, I'd be listening to him. I listen to your show. I listen to MJ at the Nerd Goggles. I like solo podcasting, you know. Devin Bruce of the Scotch and Comics podcast, you know, he found a little hook for himself. He talks about scotch. He drinks scotch and he reads a book and then he records about it and then reads another book and records about it. And by the end of it, he can hardly speak, but it's great. It's fun. Julian Lytle, Ignorant Bliss podcast. Maxim Glory has restarted his Pop Cult Online. Ian Levenstein does, he does the Comic Timing, but he does the Comic Timing Extra Point, which is kind of like a, you know, sort of solo show. Eric at Longbox Review, you know, I the solo podcasting thing now. And I find that it's a little more honest. I like ensemble shows. There's plenty of ensemble shows that I listen to. I sort of dislike when they try to become a show. Part of it is, you know what it is? Part of it is I feel like, and this may be just, you know, someone might think this is a little arrogant of me to say this, but I feel like you need to earn certain things when it comes to like an ensemble podcast or if you're trying to make a show, you know, and we get these newer shows and they have two episodes in and right away they want to talk to Jim Lee or they want to talk to, you know, Brian Michael Bendis or Greg Rucka or whatever. And sometimes they do. They get the interviews. Great. Good for them. But part of me feels like, okay, these creators have a very limited amount of time and I feel you better have an audience that is going to be there for them. And a new audience, you know, if you're just sort of bringing listeners from other podcasts, chances are they probably heard these interviews already. Are you really going to ask them something new? Unless it's something like the Sidebar podcast, they've been going on for a long time now and they really get into the art and the drawing aspect. And it's great. They do interviews with people we've heard on other shows, but they really dig into other different areas, you know? I'm looking forward to really sitting down and having the time to listen to your Greg Theakston interview, because here's somebody who I don't think has he been on a podcast before?
He said that he has never done one before. And I'll be honest, I have known him for a long time on the Kirby discussion list, mm-hmm. which when we get more into comic book fandom, but he throws out these little tidbits of stories. And I was looking all over and finally, you know, we're friends on Facebook and I just said, look, I want to interview you.
Right.
It'll be a conversation and we're just going to sit. We're going to have a discussion. And he said, oh, I'm boring.
No.
And I really had to kind of pry at him to get him to come onto the show.
Right.
And once I did, you know, we're 2.5 hours in and he goes, how long is this thing going to go? And we're going to talk again in about a month or so.
Nice.
But I want to get people who haven't really, I don't want to get who everybody else gets
right.
Because I listen to, I'm a political person. I don't bring it up on the podcast much because it's not what I am podcasting for.
Right.
But I listen to a lot of political shows and political radio and it's the same people telling the same stories with the same thing.
Right.
I had a discussion about Bill Maher's show. I used to love Bill Maher's show Real Time, but now The people who come on, they know what they're going to do, and it's just like every other political talk show. They come on, they hit their points, they move on, and you can tell that Bill Maher's trying to pull them out of their talking points, but he can't because they're too well practiced. A lot of the comic book interview shows, these guys are well versed, they're well practiced.
Oh yeah.
I love Brian Michael Bendis's writing, and he is a great marketer. And he can tell the same story four or five times to four or five different people, just like someone who shows up on Leno, and then 3 weeks later he's on Kimmel,
right,
and then he's on Live with This. I want to talk to people who haven't done this sort of thing.
Right.
Or have an interesting take.
Right.
And I will say that I started my solo podcast after listening to yours to go, you know what? I love what I do with Joe, and that's going to be the main thing because it just is.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the idea of just sitting down, like with the Kirby episode or the upcoming EC stuff, where it's, okay, I'm going to give you my personal history of what I know.
Right.
And if I find out new stuff, boy, I can't wait to say, yeah, back in three episodes ago, I screwed up, I made a mistake, and now I know this.
Right. It's your point of view. And that to me is so truthful, right? I don't care if the information is wrong. Your perception and your point of view is informed by what you know and also by what you don't know. But and that to me is interesting. I never want to talk. I like talking about these things when it's in relation to a person's experience, you know. In CGS, you know, if we did Book of the Month or if we did Spotlights, you know, I don't need a Wikipedia rundown of every comic that Mysterio has appeared in. I don't care. What's your reaction? When was the first time you were introduced to the character? Why do you like this comic? Why do you like this creator? You know, that is interesting to me, you know, that part of that discussion. And you're right, it did get hard. For, you know, there were a couple times on the show a creator would come on or one of the hosts would say something, and I bet you I could tell you what they were going to say before they were going to say it. You know, you sort of you can feel when someone is just kind of in a habitual conversation, or just they're kind of just going by the numbers. I certainly feel that about fandom too, you know. There are times when a story breaks, I'm like, oh boy, I know exactly how this is going to go.
Yep.
I think I called myself like a weatherman. I like to look at patterns and I like to see where things are shifting and where things are coming from. And I like sort of stepping back, and I think I have a good eye on this kind of stuff every now and then. And I can kind of say, you know, I think this is going to happen. I certainly do it in comics with speculating about comics and about the endings of comics and things like that. So yeah, I think that's what I mean about those interviews. You know, we would do an interview with somebody that maybe has done, you know, one or two podcasts, but not a lot. And suddenly afterwards, five other podcasts would do an interview with that person, and you sort of want to go, really? Don't you want someone kind of your own that you can call, not your own, but you know, that you did the work to go out and try to find or made the connection? Look at Uncle Sal on CGS. I mean, you know, that was an accident that we stumbled onto his zany brilliance. He was even named Uncle Sal because of the episodes on CGS. And then he starts popping up on other shows, and you know, that's his right. He can do whatever he wants. But I sort of felt like, okay, you guys are just kind of riding our coattails on this one.
Yeah.
So, it's little things like that. You know, it's not that there's any kind of ownership, but I feel like podcasts should earn their show. They should have their own hook. They should have their own sort of, you know, thing that makes it theirs, and just earn it, you know, work. And if you're not working, get out.
Well, one thing in doing the show I do with Joe is if you allow an evolution, you find a voice.
Right.
And one of the things when I listened to the early episodes and thinking about how we made them, there was a huge tug of war between us as to what we wanted the show to be.
Hmm.
And I've talked to the listeners and they didn't hear it, but boy, I did, where I was trying to pull it one direction. Joe was trying to pull it in another, and we eventually found, okay, this is what we're doing.
Right.
And I think a lot of podcasts that don't make it, or there's one that pops into my head that you guys had a feud with in the early days, where it is like a morning zoo, where, okay, we've written these jokes, we've got these bits, I'm going to come on with my radio voice, and it's, well, Joe and I actually did a huge parody of that sort of thing with our April Fool's show, where it's, hey, it's Comic Book Guys in the Morning! Oh, here's our wacky joke! Oh, the Marvel's coming out with these books, oh, they're going to be awesome! And those shows seem to, they don't last, because I think I can get that turning on my FM radio on my way into work, and I choose not to. Why am I going to put it on a device and take it somewhere with me?
Right. Right.
So are there, you've talked in the past about podcasts that you wish wouldn't have gone away.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any podcasts that you want someone to do?
Oh.
Because there are some podcasts where I go, oh, I wish somebody would do this because I don't know enough about it. Are there podcasts that you look out and you go, you know what? I'd listen to this and this and this.
Huh. That's pretty good. That's a good question. Well, I mentioned before about creator podcasts. It would be interesting to see someone do the evolution of some of the major creators, whether they're writers or artists or inkers or whatever, or cover artists in comics, outside of comics, something, you know, magazines or whatever, you know, where's the Wally Wood podcast? And by saying all this, there might be a podcast out there. I just don't know. You know, where's the Wally Wood? Where's the Joe Kubert podcast? The comic gods are going to be mad at me. The Alex Raymond. That's what I was trying to think of the name. You know, I think we find a lot of people doing coverage of the content. You can find podcasts on comic strips. You know, Bruce Rosenberger is doing a month to month, breakdown of every Marvel comic starting from the Marvel age. There's a podcast with a great title called Crisis to Crisis, and they're doing every Superman appearance from Crisis on Infinite Earths to Infinite Crisis. You know, certainly the Uncanny X-Cast, during their retro review segment, they went from X-Men number one, and now they're about ready to get to Jim Lee's X-Men number one.
Wow, they made it through the Werner Roth issues?
Yeah.
I never made it through the Werner Roth issue.
And it was fun. It was fun to sort of go with them and travel with them. And sometimes I read the books they were talking about, sometimes not, but I could look online and go, oh, that's what that was. But, you know, I don't know if anybody's doing that on a creator level to a certain degree. A very focused, pointed review of all their work, reading everything that they do. I mean, that's hard. It's hard to, I guess, get a hold of that information. You know, someone like in my Tower podcast that I always mean to get back to, I always joke that it's partly a George Perez podcast, you know, cause I loved his artwork as a kid and, you know, well, and as an adult. And I sort of want to go through and like look at a lot of his stuff. And, I always meant the, Crisis tapes. We were focused on Crisis. You know, he's still powering through those podcasts. But I remember one point asking him, I said, I kind of want to do every 10 episodes or something. Like, let's cover all the events. You know, Adam and I are really brainy when it comes to events and we love it. You know, we love researching them and analyzing them. So I thought, why not, you know, talk about every event? And he wasn't so keen on the idea. And eventually, you know, like I say, he's doing it now, but since I stepped away, I've thought about, I think I want to go through and talk about what I think are events and start with like Contest of Champions and go through chronologically and talk about every single event. You know, why not? That'd be fun. Now that I say that, somebody will steal that idea, and if they haven't already, and they'll do it. But it's that kind of thing. Like, I would love a really focused podcast on creators. I would love a really focused podcast on I would love one on sort of like alternate comics of like the 60s, 70s, 80s. A lot of this is just, I want podcasts of things I don't know about. So you doing the Kirby stuff, and I know some stuff about Kirby, but you obviously know infinitely more than I do. But when you tease the EC stuff, I was like, yes, I can't wait, because I know very little about EC. So there's my answer. I want an EC podcast, and I know you're going to do it soon, so I'm going to be sated.
Well, you're going to be overwhelmed, because one of the reasons it's taking so long is the vision I had grew to where, oh, you know, I'll do one on each series. And then it's, well, I can't do just one
right
hour-long podcast on Panic, let alone the 24 issues of Mad, let alone Kurtzman's Frontline Combat. Oh my God, it's overwhelming. But it may just, you know what? That may just be what I have to do.
Right. You just got to jump in. You know, people were asking me to talk about Infinity, the Marvel event Infinity, and I wanted to. It was Jonathan Hickman. It was a very crisis-like event. It was a very DC-esque event in the Marvel universe. And, you know, but I was a little behind on my Marvel Now reading, and I said, well, you know, it's Jonathan Hickman, and he wrote Fantastic Four. I think I want to read his Fantastic Four first. And I did. I read a portion of it, you know, when it was coming out. And then I said, wait, I'll go back and read every Jonathan Hickman Marvel comic, because there are seeds in everything. Wait, this is an event with Thanos. I've read some early Jim Starlin stuff, but not everything. I read The Death of Captain Marvel, but I'm going to go back and read some early Thanos stuff. Oh, wait, I could go back and read like Adam Warlock, where it all really, oh, it's a sickness. It's a sickness, Corey. And that's,
it is.
Yeah, it's tough. That's why it's hard to, I get it. You know, podcasting is hard, especially when you have so many ideas.
Yep. Well, we've got about about an hour and a half. And I've been saving the controversy.
Well, wait, can I tell one story before the controversy?
Sure.
I like what you said, Mark Evanier said about meeting Kirby twice. And then you told your story about meeting Kirby twice. You know, one in the comics and then one when you met him personally. And, I have a similar kind of thing. Like, I met Kirby twice too, and I thought this was where you were going to go with it, but you know, it popped right in my head when you said it. I met Kirby twice. Now, I've never met Kirby in person, but I met him twice in the pages of comic books. And I think this might be a familiar story with a lot of people, you know, where the first time I met Kirby, when I first saw his artwork, I want to say I'm fairly certain it was the first Superpowers miniseries from 1984.
Okay.
Okay. So we're talking about Kirby, you know, the way you describe it. You know, this is really the sunset years, maybe, if you want to think of it like that. Or, you know, he's not doing monthly comics. He's already out of the New God stuff. He's done the Eternals. You know, it's post Fourth World brilliance, right? It's
yeah,
you know, typical or 80s Kirby stuff. All right, so that was the first comic and he only did the covers for the first issues, and he only penciled the interiors on the last issue, issue 5, with inks by Greg Theakston, actually.
Yep.
So okay, so there was that,
and he does talk about that, by the way.
Oh, cool.
So you're gonna find out a lot about how those came about.
Awesome, awesome, great. And as someone who watched the cartoons and you know, it those Superpower, that first miniseries was kind of like Crisis before Crisis, because it was all the villains and all the heroes, and you know, it was at the time it felt a little like it was like the answer to Secret Wars and blah blah blah. Anyway, so I read it, I saw it, you know, I was in 84, what, I was just turning 12, so it wasn't resonating in my brain. they did a second miniseries. It was penciled by Kirby, but I only read like the first two issues. It's still, nothing was making a mark. I knew that there were reprints of the New Gods stuff in the Baxter paper format. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing Kirby's artwork in Who's Who. It felt to me, you know, of a different era. It felt, you know, amateurish. I know that's scandalous to say, but that's what my little brain was thinking at the time. I was only reading comics for about 5 years by this point. So, you know, I was not experienced. So, I bought Hunger Shelves off, I mean, Hunger Shelves, Hunger Dogs, sold it on eBay years later. I read it. I had no idea what the story was referencing. I just read it because I loved those graphic novels. Those square graphic novels during the 80s
yep.
were awesome. They were so cool. I knew the characters. I knew Omak. I knew Demon from Swamp Thing. I knew Commandy from DC Comics Presents. So all of that wasn't making a mark on who Kirby was. You know, this is before podcasting. It's before I really knew I could read some magazines. It was before the Jack Kirby Collector, probably. I don't know. It was, you know, there wasn't a lot I could reference. It was before the internet. So I wasn't like, or as we know, as I know it. So then came Marvel Saga. Do you remember Marvel Saga from the 80s?
Oh, yeah.
Love that book. They were putting the Marvel Universe, the Marvel Age of the Marvel Universe, into chronological order using comics that came out in the 60s, comics that came out in the 70s, comics that came out in the 80s, mixing them all together. So not a lot of Kirby stuff, but, you know, you would get the origin of Dr. Doom, so it would be penciled by Byrne. You would get some Spider-Man by Ditko, but I started to recognize that there was a lot of this one artist when it came to a lot of those early stories. So I was like, okay, well, that, you know, certainly, again, he wasn't really doing a lot at DC, and Marvel was more where he made his footprint. And I was reading everything in the 80s. I read Marvel, DC, all kinds of stuff. So, it was getting a little more familiar. The second time I met Jack Kirby, where it finally all made sense of who he is, who he was, and what he did for comics, happened because of two things. And I forget which one came first. The Kurt Busiek, Alex Ross miniseries Marvels. Because of that miniseries, and because they touched on the early years of the Marvel Universe up to the Galactus trilogy.
Yeah.
And because there was Wizard magazine, and because there were just a little more reference material out there, and trades were starting to get a footprint and a foothold and all that. I started to realize, oh, this guy was the Marvel Universe. All these concepts, all these characters, for the most part, all these creations, this is Jack Kirby everywhere. He died that year in 94. I can't remember if Marvels came at the end of 94 or 95. But all throughout comic stores, shortly after he died, there was that crazy Frank Miller speech that he gave at that Diamond retailer meeting or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it was plastered everywhere. People had printouts of this speech. Frank Miller just went bonkers on the entire comics community about Marvel, about standing on the shoulders of celebrities, about Neil Adams, about who really is Jim Shooter, and most of all about Jack Kirby. And because of those two things, I started to look and really look for Jack Kirby stuff. And after that, that's when I started seeing these just some fantastic artwork. It started to make sense where some of those artists after him were inspired, why they were inspired. You know, that whole John Byrne Fantastic Four run, inspired by Kirby.
Oh yeah.
The even the Walt Simonson Thor to a degree, you know, and so, you know, I started seeing New Gods artwork and Eternals artworks because they were finally reprinting in, you know, maybe comics or some random trade. I remember seeing an image, I don't know where it's from, but of Dr. Doom standing over Silver Surfer, and beautiful image of Commandy, and all these things. And that's when I said, whoa, this is what Kirby is. This is who Kirby is. That was the second time I met Jack Kirby and fell in love with his artwork. And it really was those two things, the Marvel's miniseries and Frank Miller's, just his out and out, just blistering of the comic, industry. I mean, Eric Stevenson just wishes he could do a speech like that. It was an amazing speech. And even back in 1994, with limited sort of, you know, again, the news wasn't instantaneous like it is today. That thing spread like wildfire all over comic stores. And, I said, wow. So that's my Kirby story.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to me how people come to certain artists. And I've told the story on the podcast. I didn't know when I first started picking up Marvel books, I didn't know what a reprint was.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, wow, here's this Jack Kirby drawing the Fantastic Four, and this is really cool. Oh, look, it's George Perez drawing the Fantastic Four, and it's cool too. But the stories are different, and they don't, and it took me about a year before it's, oh, this is stuff from the 60s. And then when Kirby came back to Marvel, you know, there were like, you know, I was in my junior high and I was in love and everybody else was like, I don't like this stuff. So when we would trade comics, it's, oh, give me that Captain America. Give me that Eternals. Give me that 2001. And I read the comic 2001 long before I saw the movie. To where now when I watch the movie, it's, well, you know, Kirby did it better. To which my friend who's a Kubrick worshiper always threatens to smack me in the back of the head with a mallet.
Yeah, I have a healthy run of Commandy that I inherited somehow, and I'm looking to fill some holes, and I can't wait to read that stuff. But even like his Black Panther 70s stuff, and
I love that.
Yeah, there are just, I mean, I love just hanging out on the internet and just punching in Jack Kirby double page spreads and just seeing just some amazing artwork and, so emotional too, so powerful and emotional. So, I'm still a neophyte when it comes to him and, you know, I can't wait to read more and absorb more and, you know, at my own pace. It's sort of how him and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez are two artists that I just love to go to discover a new piece of artwork that I've never seen before and just go, wow, look at that.
Now, have you met Jose?
I have.
He is the nicest gentleman I've ever met, ever.
He's very soft-spoken initially. I think he likes to play off that maybe he doesn't understand English or speak English well, but he does. And I met him at a New York Comic Con and he's a slight man and I just thanked him, you know, I just thanked him. And I don't get books signed and I don't really get sketches or anything like that. I sort of just want to spend 5 minutes and just say, thank you. This is what I like. This is the stuff I like. I did it with, Grant Morrison actually. I want to say, I can't remember if it was San Diego. It must've been a San Diego show or New York where I was hanging out at a publisher's booth and two booths down, they put up this little announcement that Grant Morrison was going to be there if you wanted to come and talk to him. And I said, really? What? So I saw the line. There was two people in line before me. I stood there. I waited. I had recording equipment, but I said, you know what? Nope, I'm doing this for myself. I sat there and talked with him for 5 minutes, talked about how we're both Scorpios and talked about the Invisibles and talked about Animal Man and a mutual we used to have on CGS a lot to talk about Grant Morrison and Grant Morrison knew of him and just it was really cool. And I remember another time, I want to say at C2E2, I think, or somewhere, there was this long line for Geoff Johns. I think it was, might have been right before Infinite Crisis or maybe around that time. Everybody was getting stuff sketched. He was doing little simple head sketches because Geoff Johns can draw a little bit and
Yeah.
People were signing books, whatever. I had nothing. I came up to him and I said, and he had his pencil in his hand, and I said, no, put that down. Give your hand a rest. I just want to say thank you for blah, 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 blah. And he said, oh my God. He said, well, thank you. Thank you so much. He said, can I sign anything for, I said, no. I really just want to, and I think he signed like a poster. He said, no, I have to sign something for you. He said, I really appreciate that you just said that. And, so that was my experience with Jose Luis Garcia Lopez as well.
We have him at our convention every year.
Oh, cool.
And he asks to come. And we fly him in and everything. And the reason he comes is because, well, first off, the artists all treat him as if the Pope has arrived.
Is this SpringCon?
Yes.
Yeah.
They treat him as if the Pope has arrived.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fascinating to me to see. You know, Adam Hughes acts like a giddy fanboy around him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just nervous and tongue-tied. And all of these people, Howard Chaykin, you know, everybody who comes there. And he's the sweetest, nicest man. He always comes up to those of us who work the con and, you know, thanks us. You know, the fact that you do all this for me, the fact that you, and he always, I can't believe how much I sell here. You, the fans here. And we're just happy you're here.
See, Corey, you used to try to get us to come to SpringCon all the time, but I don't think you ever told me that Jose Luis Garcia Lopez used to be there, because my ass would be there.
I'm not the one who did the arm twisting, though.
Oh.
I would just invite you, Nick, who owns the convention now, because it got to the point somebody needed to own it.
Mm-hmm.
And they burned me out. Friends don't let friends run conventions. Someday I should tell the story of how I got burned out hard on running that show.
Yeah.
But he was the one who would email and say, look, we'll fly you in. We'll do this. We'll do this. We'll do this. And it's running a convention like ours is odd in that once somebody comes, they want to be there every time. Mm-hmm. Adam Hughes is a great example where he and his wife will come for the poker game, because he has so much fun at the poker
game. See, now you'll get pants to go because there's poker.
Howard Chaykin comes because at the AfterCon dinner, we have steak. And he literally will tell people, you know, when, oh, the SpringCon? Yeah, you should go. You know why? They give you steak. And you know what they give you after that? More steak. And it's interesting how each person comes to the convention.
Oh, yeah.
And you talked earlier about Wizard World. One of the things that really annoys me is Wizard World tried to buy the Minneapolis convention.
Mm.
And we're told no. And then, like a month later, 2 weeks before our show, boom, there they are.
Yeah.
And they do that. We've never heard of a Minnesota comic book convention. Have no idea what you people are talking about.
Right.
It's the only time the convention center was open. No, the convention center's open all the time because I know wrestling promoters who book there, and they could literally call on Thursday and go, can we run a show there Saturday? We can? Okay.
Right.
So, and that seems like a good break-off point. The first part of this episode got a lot of activity on Twitter, so I want to thank everybody who mentioned it, who sent me some very kind words. A couple people sent me some emails, one of which was from a longtime listener, Mr. Poindexter, who's been with us for, I don't want to say since the beginning, but it sure seems like he's been since the beginning, saying that he was a little surprised to find out that I was a father and I hadn't mentioned it on the show. And I'll just answer here in the podcast what I answered with him. When I started Crazy Comics and Stories, my son was living out on his own. And I respected his privacy. Didn't want to get into things that were going on with him. But also because the podcast was more about Joe and I messing around, telling stories about what's going on in the past and what's going on currently, my son didn't hang out at the comic shop much. Didn't come to many of the conventions. He read comics, but I think it's one of those things where if you're surrounded by comics all the time, you don't really, it's kind of like being surrounded by TV all the time. You don't really go, oh, wow, TV. I'm going to go and enjoy TV, and I'm going to go to a convention for TV, and on and on. Again, I want to thank Peter for being so generous with his time. He's got some great stories. And part three, we get into our thoughts about current comic fandom and the direction that it seems to be going. Again, I want to thank everyone for listening. I have a couple of sponsors, and they are sponsors that I use. It's not just people who bought some ads. It's sponsors that I use. And the first one is DreamHost.com, my web host. They've been wonderful to me. I've been with them for over a decade. I've had very, very few problems. Whenever I do, they're able to fix them quickly. It's DreamHost.com. And if you need a web host, you should go there. Use the code CRAZY. You get $20 off your first year. My other sponsor is Graze.com. Graze.com is healthy snacks delivered to your house at a reasonable price. And if you use the code, oh gosh. There we go. I'll edit this out. Okay, if you use the code CORYS3R5P, that's CORYS3R5P, you get your first and your fifth box free. The snacks that I got this week, I got fruit and seed flapjacks, which are rustic rolled out flapjacks with mixed seed and dried fruit. Bonnie Wee Oat Bakes, red onion marmalade with cheese and chive oat bakes, and they're amazing. That is one of my favorite things they send. An apple Cosmo, which is dried apple, dried cranberries, and lime-infused raisins. And then America's Nut Mix, which is red skin peanuts, pecan nuts, Brazil nuts, and almonds. And if you want, you don't have to wait 2 weeks for your next box. You can sign up and get a new box every week. Me, I get it every 2 weeks. Those are the ones I use. You can contact me for any reason. If you want to buy an ad, if you have a comment about the show, if you just want to send me a little note that says, hey, saw what you did, liked it a lot. You can email me at corey.strode@gmail.com. I have a Twitter at Solitaire Rose. I have a voicemail line that you can call and leave a message at, and that number is 952-856-0519. There is also a fan page. That's right. You can go to the Facebook and become a fan. It is facebook.com/solitaireroseradio. Next episode, the final part of our Peter Rios epic, will be next week. And then I'm going to take Peter's hint. I'm going to dive right into the EC stuff. I'm going to continue with the Jack Kirby stuff. I've also got some interviews lined up, and it's interviews with people you've never heard on a podcast before. Well, at least on a comic book podcast before. So again, thank you very much, and I'll be back. Ow!